All this is cleaned out and scraped to the best of the ability, and the water is cut off and sealed so that no water comes into the mill. Otherwise they start washing the grains, so no water comes into the mill. Then the examination takes place of the grains. So the way it is done is a few bags are open and you examine the grains to see that there aren't any grains that have already started sprouting. They've been sprouting, that you know they've been exposed to dampness and it's no good. So you examine from a few bags, you take a few bags and you see that it's alright, you can already pass it. Then we used to take 100 bags and pass it through the mill. 100 bags. Those 100 bags were not considered pesachic, couldn't be used for matzah. So if there was still something from the rollers, from the grooves in the rollers, it would get taken off by these 100 bags already. So that was out of the way. Only then did they start the grinding of the then you've got to be very careful once it's ground into flour that it mustn't be put into a damp place. Say in Los Angeles, this is the rainy season, and already they started a couple of months ago doing this grinding the flour. You've got to be very careful that it isn't housed in a warehouse with a window open, the rain comes in there, it's finished. Immediately the water touches, you've got to be very careful. Assuming you've managed to do all this, then it is taking this the way you saw it done.
Well, I saw it once, it was in the bakery.
Once in the bakery. Middle. Then once you come into the bakery, they've got very good ways of doing it today. And that is that there is a kneading machine and there is a basin. The flour is put into the basin, it's measured into the basin, everything is completely dry. Then a button is pressed. That button releases a certain amount of water straight into the flour and immediately the machine begins kneading. Now there's a very interesting thing. As long as one is working with the dough, it can't become chometz. It doesn't become chometz as long as you are working with it. Immediately you stop working with it, it starts. But as long as you work with it, it won't become chometz. So it goes and this machine kneads. When you reckon that the machine has kneaded it, stop the machine, take it, put it immediately on a table, and then it goes through a roller, and it goes several times through the roller to flatten it out. And all the time you're working with it, it can't become chometz. Doesn't become chometz. Once you've flattened it out, it goes to another machine that cuts it. From that machine, it goes automatically into the oven. The oven consists of a conveyor belt. It goes right into the oven and through. It comes out on the other side, ready baked. The whole process with us used to take a maximum of 11 minutes. From the time that the water touched the front till it came out on the other side, it used to take a maximum of 11 minutes, which was very good going.
Did this basin between uses now, does this have to be thoroughly cleaned out and dried?
Between uses.
In other words, you make one batch, you're now going to make a second batch.
Very good. It was very carefully. That wasn't where the trouble was. The trouble lay in something quite different.
The table?
No. The trouble lay in when it used to go through the roller, it went through the roller, then from the roller, it went into a further roller where it cut it. There were the edges that were left open. It doesn't, if you cut it, it doesn't cut it straight like this. It cuts it here or here. So there's a little piece left over. Now, the baker wants that little piece. He doesn't want to throw it away. So he collects that little pieces, and when the next lot of dough comes, and before it goes into the roller, he puts it in there, you see. That is where the trouble comes. So that is standing, and that becomes chometz when it is standing. You're not working with it. That is where you've got to watch it. And for that, you've got your mashgichim. And he gets very annoyed about this, and he gets very upset, and he pretends to be upset. And then he starts crying. And he's beaten a tear, and the tears come down. You're ruining it. I'm making a loss. I'll go bankrupt. I call this class, you don't take too much notice. It makes a lot of profit. Yes?
How long can the dough stand without working it before it becomes
cold? Oh, a maximum of 18 minutes. But we never wait for that amount of time. We work with it all the time and see that it comes through. There are other dangers. You see, you're dealing with... Sorry. I was going to say we're dealing with business people. We're even dealing with ordinary people. So what happens is it comes out on the other side. He wants white matzahs. He wants white matzahs for two reasons. First of all, it sells better. But he's going to make matzah meal from these matzahs. And he doesn't want the matzah meal to be black or brown. He wants it to be white. So he wants it to come out on the other side very white.
So he wants to undercook it.
He wants to undercook it to such an extent that it comes out on the other side, and you take a matzah and you break. But it's not brittle.
It just bends.
It just bends, you see. That means now it's going chometz. Now it's going chometz. It's not properly cooked yet. It's going chometz. He says, what does it matter? It'll get dry afterwards. Find a meister. That's exactly where the danger is. So I just want to tell you how difficult it is to see that the whole thing is kept right, yes?
I'm confused on how, if you're continuing to work it can't turn chometz. Because, I mean, theoretically, you could work it that way for hours, and it would start to ferment and everything else, even though you were working it.
No, I could only tell you what the Gemara says and what the facts are. I can't tell you why it's like that. I know that if you once you're needing it, once you're working, it doesn't become chometz. That I know. That doesn't become chometz. I watch my wife doing it. It makes challah, and I watch. Of course, the everything is chometz there. I watch her making challah, but it's very interesting to me. When she puts it away and she's finished and puts it away, you know, the whole dough is about so big, and she puts it into quite a big container, and it's right down at the bottom. She doesn't know that in the middle of the night when I get up sometimes and I wander about, I go straight on Thursday nights to Luke. And it's risen. Right up to the top. It's risen already, you see. Rises quickly. That is the way it works. Now, this is the Rashbam.
Rabbi, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay, so what happens if you discover, you open a few bags and you say, oh, there's a grain here or a grain there that's sprouted?
What you do is, first of all, before you go, you pray very, very hard that it doesn't happen. If it happens, you're in great trouble. You've got to parcel the whole lot.
The whole lot? The whole, you have 100 bags there?
The shipment, what can you do? You see, we had trouble, I suppose, in this country it's much easier. Even now it's easier. But when I first started on this, when we first started on it, and we did it as a business, which was very good, we never used to go down less than three of us. And you know, what escaped one caught the other one, so it was very good. When we were working, they had to use three types of grain to get the correct texture. They had to use South African grain, Argentinian grain, and Canadian grain. Now, Argentinian grain and Canadian grain were shipped. We were always afraid of that. We were dead scared of that. That in the shipping, you see, you get stamped in the holds of the ships. We were used to be dead scared of that sort of thing. And you know, but afterwards it wasn't necessary anymore. Different parts of South Africa started growing grain. In a country like America, I'm sure they've got all the grain they need and the best textures. You know, they don't have to worry about it. Just so let us start the next toast with it.
Do they ever make matzah from the other grains, barley? Or?
I've never seen it. You could. You can make it from barley. You can make it from oats. I've never seen it. Ma darko shel oni bepruso nire, the gam ha multi tzorich lavorech ala pruso. Exactly, the toasters on the other side of the page. Exactly what Mark said. Nire says those who would appear, the gam ha multi tzorich lavorech ala pruso. V'chein mashme bepere keter morchin, dike omara kevodim li inyan pesach shemeniach pruso besocha shleimos. It says in the Gemara in Brochus that you put the pruso in between the whole matzah, so that you are making the brocha of Amotzi not only on the two shleimos but on the pruso also. You'll have to read it there. So we do this, and please bring your Mishnah Brewers next time, because we go right to you will remember that that matzo bismana is the rice of one of his rabono, and we said that since this was min bishaina mino, the one was the rice and the one was drabonon, we said that the moral, which is the drabonon, comes and mavato the rice, so we mustn't eat them both together. We mustn't eat them both together. And we said that the top of the way the Rashbam and Rashi learned it, that it was a question of tar. You remember? Then when we learned that the taste is mavato, then when we learned the Gemara of bolo matzah yotzo, bolo moro lo yotzo, we said if he swallows matzah, what is the reason that he's yetzo? Because you don't need the ta'am of matzah. I just want to explain it to you last time, but I want you to just to get it absolutely clear. And the question was asked, if you don't need the ta'am of matzah, then what does it matter if you have matzah u moro? The one shouldn't. How can you say that the moral is mavato the tam matzah? That was one question, and the other question was in reverse, and that is the question that Mark asked, and we discovered that Tosfos asked that question, and the question in reverse was, how can we say that if he's born a matzah umoral, he swallows matzah, mean moro, he's yates of the matzah, not the moro, but the moro should be mavato the matzah. And we, Tosfos explains that when is moro mavato of the matzah? In the iso, when there is chewing, both mixed together. But when there is blio, when there is swallowing it, it goes down into the tummy as matzah separately and as moro separately. Then the one doesn't come in mavato of the other. That's why if he swallows matzah and he swallows moro, then the matzah is yetzer, the moro is not yetzer. But to get back to the second question, to the first question, and that was in the previous Gemara, when we said that if he eats matzah and moro together, the moro which is drabonon comes and is mavato of the rice, though, the mavate of the matzah. So we said it was the taste that it is mavate. The din is, for example, if a person were to manufacture tasteless matzah, taste this matzah. It hasn't got any taste at all. You wouldn't be yetzer with that matzah. If he swallows matzah, he also doesn't taste it. The din is the matzah must have the taste of matzah. You don't have to taste the taste of the matzah. But the matzah is going to have the taste of the matzah. If it hasn't got the taste of the matzah, it's not matzah. Now, when you eat matzah and moren together, so what happens, and there's a din of bitul, what happens is that matzah is robbed of its taste. So it means there isn't, the matzah itself hasn't got taste. I could get away with it that I don't taste matzah. But the thing is, the matzah itself hasn't got the taste. The tam matzah derisa, well, it is taken away, the taste of the matzah is taken away. So that is how we learn that Gemara. Now, we've got to get on to Gemara today, and this is important Gemara because the whole of the Seder is based on this. So we start from the previous page, four lines from the bottom of the page, Kuftias Bobon Basius.
This question just came up, and maybe I'm not thinking it through. But when we eat the matzah, and maybe this toast goes into it, I don't know. When we eat the matzah, we're also yotze racham mishna.
Yes.
Now that's a mitzvah to rabbanim, right?
But what difference does it make?
So we're fulfilling a mitzvah to rabbanim and a mitzvah derived at the same time, at the same eating.
No, but you're making the matzah. Let's get onto that Gemara, you see. Let's get onto that Gemara and then we see.
We also, just when we get to it, on the question of poor person with the oven,
yes.
We had a question on that when we get to that.
Good, fine. All right, we'll get it. Now, it says in the Omar Shmuel, said Shmuel, Lechem only. Lechem only. Now, in the Torah, matzah is called lechem only. But the way it is written in the Torah is, it is written ayin nun yud. And over the ayin there is a cholem, there is a dot, which makes it only. How would I have read that word if it didn't have any dots at all?
Only.
I would have read it only. But I've got to pronounce it only because that is the Torah Shebal Peh. The Torah Shebal Peh tells me that although in the Torah there are no dots, but that is the way I've got to read it. Lechem only, yes?
You said it was spelled Ayin Nun Yud?
Ayin Nun Yud.
Because here it shows that iron.
I'll deal with that. I just wanted to get it clear. Yes, John.
Pardon me, the Nicodemus Parshas about that.
Yes, that's quite right. There is another point that's difficult to understand. Are the Nicodemus only Torah Sheva? It was that. That is from Sinai. You see, that has come down from Sinai. That iron new yud is read only, and it's not read only. That's the way it's come down to us. Now I'm using the Ashkenazic pronunciation, so those who don't use it must bear with me. What that is the Torah Shebarpe. What we are not sure of is, are the signs and their names also Torah Shebarpe? Did this also come down from Sinai, but it was oral, or was this introduced later?
You mean like a cholam?
A cholam, or a comet, or a patech, or a segel, or a chirik? Was it introduced later? That is, in from the Torah we've got, this is the way it's got to be read. And those who came later gave names to them, and introduced a code. I mean, what was that?
Is that the one? Does everyone agree that those are the names for those vowels?
Yes, there's the names. Why not what?
No, I mean, are there other schools that call a sere something else?
Very slight differences. In Rashi, yes. But in Rashi, you get it. But it's very slight. You know, it's come with a chiri godel and a chiri cotton. There's a chiri godel and a chiri cotton. As there is a comet's godel and a comet's cotton. So with those things, the Rashi gives it sometimes different names, you see. And a tzeder godel and a tzeder cotton, that can happen. So, but that is a different, that's a different, yes?
I just remember learning something that the Gaon had brought down, where we learned something through a remes by a comment or a pasuk on the same word.
Yes, of course.
Does that mean that it wouldn't be necessarily...
No, this is the way it's come down. It's only an oni must be written. The writing is oni and the reading is oni. But did they use the word cholem and chirik?
Who is that?
As it came down, as Moshe say to the people, when he taught them the Torah, this is or only, it's pronounced only, there is a cholem over the iron and a chirik under the yud.
We had Zephyr and Zophar with the mullet.
What does it prove?
Well, it proves that there were two ways of reading it with different vowels, so they knew the various vowel structures, certainly.
Yes, but that is no proof. Because it's not Zecher and Zocher, it's Zecher and Zecher. Isn't that so?
Zecher and?
And Zecher.
I don't read it so far.
No. Zecher and Zecher.
Seems to make sense that there would be some names that was given. I mean, there was name for all the letters of the alphabet.
Well,
and if everyone agrees that this, I mean, if there's no, if it was introduced later, it would seem like the Sephardim might have another name, the Yemenites might have another name.
Yes,
if everyone agrees that.
I must tell you that
the one that was introduced.
I feel that it is all these things were told us.
Rabbi, if it was introduced before we broke off into Sephardim and Ashkenazim,
let's say the whole Nachlo Rishto, Timche et Zecher Amolek and Zecher Amolek. That's where you read it two ways. Zecher and Zecher.
Okay, that's what it was.
You
follow it. Right, Shoal got in the problem because he read it so far.
Zecher and Zecher.
What's the
even
stomach?
Find Ashrei in Yul. Is it a similar prayer? Find Ashrei, and look up Zion. It goes according to the other things, and look up Zion and see the way it is written.
So her actual.
It's written Zecher. You follow? This one is also written Zecher. What have you got, Maurice? Also written Zecher.
Zecher.
Then it's written Zecher. So if you take 12, then you probably find half and half. Some have got Zeichen, some have got Zeichen.
Eretz Yisrael, maybe it's different.
No, it's no different. So you've got these things, but it's Zecher, Zecher and Zecher. So we read it twice. We read it one Zecher Amalek, and then we read Pete, and we read a Zecher Amalek to get him to make sure, you see.
Make sure we
do. But that is possible because we are not sure. That is just, we're not sure, is it Zecher or Zecher?
So then we should do it also when we do read it as Parsha Shavuot.
We don't worry about that. Because then we don't worry about it. We only worry because when it's Parsha Zohar, it's from the Torah. It's the Torah that we've got to read it, so we want to be quite sure that everything is in order. But be that as it may, the point is that the pronunciation and the trope that it is Torah Shebal Peh, about that there is no question. The only thing is, are the actual points and the actual trope, the notation, is that also Torah Shebal Peh, did it also come down Halacha Moshe B'Sinai? Did it also come down like that? Or did they say, we were told to chant it in this way, we were told to pronounce it in this way, so we are going to make notation and we are going to make point in order to do it like that? That is the question. Why do you look so puzzled?
I thought it was. I always thought it was.
We like to think of it that way. But if a person says the other way, it's not an apikoris.
I understand, but the reason why I always thought that way is because we've always seen that we can learn Torah Shebal Peh out from the very fact
that the
very
from the top, from the top, the ground.
But he's talking about the shape of the trope.
But he could have done it. He learns it not from the shape, he learns it from the names.
The names of the
names. From the names, he learns it from the names. Dargot, really learns it from the names.
And I've seen him do, that's the point he's making, I've seen him do the same thing with the names of the vowels too.
You can argue, of course, they made the names also, they took all these things into consideration. Although it's unlikely. But one can argue both ways, but if the person's got the other, he's not an apikoris. So I don't think he's an apikoris. Yes.
Isn't the script even derived from Ezra the scribe?
No, this is the original script. That's a mistake that they make at that place. Moon Holland Road. They make a mistake there. They say that the original script was the ancient Canaanitic or Hebrew script, and that Ezra made it like this. And they say that Ezra made it like this in order to make it easier. Now, anybody who's got any idea of Torah knows, to make it more difficult, that makes sense. But to make it easier, we don't have a thing like that. We don't try and make it easier. We haven't got a thing like that. But that's the first thing. The second thing is, on the coins, the Maccabean coins, which was after the time of Ezra, they've got the ancient script. So why didn't they have it? There you should certainly use the script. But the original script was this script. And after the Egel HaZohar, we didn't deserve to be able to use that script anymore. We weren't allowed to use that script. It was too holy after the Egel HaZohar. So then we used that other script, that funny script. When Ezra came along, the people rose to such heights. The heights that they rose when they stood in Mount Sinai, you see, it's destroyed. So it was restored, the original script was restored. That's how it works.
So a Sefer Torah written in the time of David and Melech would not have the script?
If it's David and Melech, no, would probably have had the other script. And the time of Ezra came back again.
What is the other?
Now you had the Sefer Torah that was in the Oron had the original script. But all those that were written afterwards, we added.
What is the other script? I don't understand. This is the original script, Rabbi?
This is the original script. But the other script is of Aleph is made like this. And Aleph is like this.
It's another script.
Finish.
It's not finished. It's true that that script, I mean, from the time of the Egel Azor until that's the script they used, until only because we weren't allowed to that use it. But they still knew that script.
Even in the Sefer Torah, they would have done it like that.
Yes, that was the whole thing.
So other than the Sefer Torah and the Aron, they had it no other place?
No. But in the Oron, the Sefer Torah, they had the original script.
Like what we have.
Yes, the same as we have. With everything, with all the, you know, the judges and all that sort of thing.
We deserve to have this script. People are talking about
After the Egel Azor, they didn't have the script. This was restored by Ezra.
Why are we still going to use the script?
Because this is the original script.
Great, but I mean, you said, we learned...
Actually, it's not quite the original script because it's without the... It's without the... all the little extra things that are put in that is in the same era.
Well, the shapes are a little different too. I mean, the...
A little bit, yes.
What's confusing me is, after reaching a certain low level, we're no longer allowed to use the original script.
Right. With after the golden,
then we rose up to the heights of Ezra,
yes,
which we are nowhere near anymore. Why hasn't it been taken away again? There was some authority until, I mean, I know there's no authority now.
With the Korban and
look here, I beg your pardon, you know, if you rise like that, and you're on the height, and then you fall like that, it's more serious that when you rise again to those heights like this, and you fall again like that. You don't fall like that. Now, I just want to show you something. Very much on this in the din. But what is Ukshemaschil Avodim Oyin Lafarav Mazir Haka Oroshebo Hamatzos Lafodov Vekore Kol Huagodo? So, the whole Hagodo is read with the matzahs before one. That is, that one takes away the Keora, puts it aside after he has said the Karpas, then Manishtano takes place, then the plate, the Seder plate, is brought back again, and then he says Avodim Ohim. Because it's based on this Gemara, lechem she'onin olav devorim, or the Braisa she'onin olav devorim harbe, we answer many things about it. Manishtanu alaylo azeh bikol alaylos shebachol alaylos onu ochlin chometz matzo alayla azeh kulo matzo. Is that how it goes? Alaylo azeh, from alaylo azeh kulo matzo, only matzo. We answer Avodim Ohim, we answer on the questions with the matzah. The matzah is in front of us. Is that clear? Now let's take another thing. Says Dovor Acher, another thing about Lechem Oni Kasiv. In the Torah, although it's pronounced Oni, it is written Ayin Nun Yud, and Ayin Nun Yud is Oni. So when it is pronounced one way and written another way, it means that there are two pshotim in the same word. So what is the second pshat? Is bread of poverty. Ma oni she darko bibruso, afkan bibruso. In the same way as an oni, his way is to eat a part of a loaf and not a whole loaf. The word in Latin, the word pars, which means a part, comes from the word pruso, porus prus, comes from the word por pruso, and the English word part comes from the Latin word part, so originally it comes from that word. So in this, just as an oni, his way is be pruso. He doesn't put a whole loaf of bread on the table. He only puts a part of a loaf on the paira. Af can't be pruso. Yet it is also not a whole matzah, but a part of a matzah.
Now I ask you, what does that mean? What does it mean? I can't understand what it means. So what does it mean? That at the table,
when we make the bracha alach l'olat matzah, we make it only on a part.
So how do you know that?
Rashbam and Rashi.
From where does Rashbam and Rashi know it? What I want you to see is that from the Gemara itself we would never be able to know that. It's only, I don't know what it means, so I look in Rashi at the top of the page up front with Pluso, Leborich al achilas matzo, to make the brocha al achilas matzo, I need a Pluso. Now I understand what it means, but I wouldn't have understood so otherwise. Where does Rashi get it from?
His teacher.
He gets it from Torah Shemapi, he gets it from his teacher, But the great thing about Rashi was that Rashi knew already we were going through such difficult times that fewer and fewer people will be learning Torah and it'll be forgotten. So Rashi gave us the pshat. So that's the only reason that we know it. You follow what I'm saying, Don? Otherwise we wouldn't have known it at all. So af kan bipruso, here also it is bipruso. And we'll soon go through the Rashi and Rashbam and see what it means. Dovor acher, another thing. Ma dark, another reason, oni. Ma darko shel oni, hu masik vi ishto of for. Oni, the way it is baked, the way a poor person bakes. He stokes the oven and his wife does the kneading and the putting the bread into the oven. Why do they do it that way? Because if the wife does the stoking and the putting in the new bread, then while she is busy taking the bread and putting it to the oven, the oven loses heat. That's a waste. You've got no idea how every pruto meant something. They lived on prutos.
What is a pruto?
A pruto is half a cent. Have they still got half cents in America?
No.
A pruto is half a cent.
Pre-revolution.
A pruto, what do you mean a pre-revolution?
Before the American Revolution they had a half cent.
It was the English money.
No, they had half a cent.
They had money.
Before the war they used to have half a cent. Yeah.
No. The half cent went out.
Well, I mean, that in 1860 they had half a cent, then there was a need for half a cent. In England, you had a quarter of a penny. A farthing was a quarter of a penny. And when I came to England, when I started studying, a quarter of a penny was worth. A farthing, when I went in, if I had a breakfast, it cost me tuppence farthing. 2 pennies and a farthing cost a breakfast cost me. You follow, that is the way you worked. So it was a great loss. The oven lost heat. So the husband did the stoking, and then he called to his wife, Soro, it's ready, and then she brought the bread, and no time was wasted. And then it went into the oven. Afkar namihu masik ve'ishta ofo. In baking matzahs, you do the same thing. He stokes, and his wife puts it in, but for a different reason. Here it is that it shouldn't become chometz, because if he would put the matzah in, if he would put the dough in, it would become chometz. Or if she would do the stoking and then come and take the dough, and in the meantime the dough, it would become chometz. So they share it, they do it like this, yes?
This one I'm having difficulty.
Yes.
It's probably just technical.
Yes.
After the bread is kneaded, it usually doesn't have to sit at room temperature and then rise, and cannot in that period of time the wife prepare the oven, so that when that following the preparation of the oven at that time the bread goes in.
I don't quite know what the I don't quite know.
In other words, when the bread is there's a period where the bread is just sitting there to rise at room temperature.
So,
when the woman finishes kneading the bread, it doesn't immediately have to go in the oven, right?
Yes. For what are you speaking, bread or matzah?
bread. Speaking of bread, I'm speaking the first part about the poor person that's saving the person.
Yes.
Okay, so she needs the bread.
Yes.
And then when she's finished, the bread sits at room temperature and it rises. During that period of time, she can prepare the oven.
Yes, and then what does she do? She's got to leave the oven and she's got to fetch the bread and then bring it there.
Well, it could be right next to each other, can it?
Well, it's not. You can't have it next to each other. Because if it's next to each other, the bread will start baking and it won't rise at all. Can't be next to each other.
It could be a foot or two away.
Fine, but even that takes time. And it loses. And like this, you're stoking all the time. And as soon as you've stoked it, you bring, and it goes on stoking. And it goes on stoking. It doesn't stop. Until it reaches a certain... But if it would stop stoking... And then he's got to go back, he's got to use it much more fuel.
You mean the
these are wood burning,
person?
Well, of course.
The person is continuously working
on it. Wood, not go wood, it's wood.
The person is continuously working with the wood to keep that up.
It must be. Because if he stops, and then he's got to soak further, he's got to put in more wood. And like this, it's much better. He's putting wood and he's turning the wood and turning it. He gets the heat. There's no question about that. Right. So, now, for that... You've never had it yet. I still had it. So, look at your Rashi piece. Afkam biprusa, levorech ala chilat matzo. So, don't forget, we used to bake our own matzah in Lithuania. Baked the matzah, so we baked. In Johannesburg, we also baked our own matzah. I was at the factories to bake the matzah, but then it was already highly advanced. It was gas ovens or electric ovens and all machinery, but then everything was done by hand. Af kan bi pruso, says Rashi, levorech al achilas matzo, to make the brocha al achilas matzo. Now, don't forget that when the Seder is as follows. We wash our hands and we make Al Mekilas Yodoyim. Then we've got to make two brochas, Hamotzi Lechem Mino Oretz and Al Achilas Matzah. Says Rashi, when we bake the brocha Al Achilas Matzah, that is the second brocha, you make it only over the pruso. You follow? Only over the broken matzah. Only on the half matzah, which you have broken at the beginning of the Seder. Only on the half matzah. I knows nothing. I'm going through it with you to show you how we come to our conclusions to it.
Okay.
That's the whole purpose of tonight's Shia. Leborech al achilas matzah, says Rashi, ushtel shleimus maisi mishum birkas amotzi. And the two whole ones are brought because of the Birkas Hamotzi. The Logora Mishor Yomim Tovim Shetzorich Livtzoa Ashtek Pikora Shlemus. Because Pesach isn't worse than any other Yontif. And on any other Yontif, we've got to have two whole Kikoros. So on Pesach, you've also got to have two whole ones. So says Rashi, you need two whole matzahs to make Hamotzi Lechem Mino Oretz. And you need the pruso, on the pruso you'll make the second brocha of Al Achilas Matzo. Liftsoa has got two meanings. It means to make Hamotzi, and it also means to break bread or to break the matzah. Got it?
Yes.
Right. So here it's Yushetzorich Livtsoa Ashtei in the first, the tzeya means he makes motzi on the two whole ones, uvotzeya mi achas meyashlemos, and he breaks from one of the whole ones. You follow? And he breaks, that's all that Rashi says. So obviously he breaks from the pruso too, because he makes the brocha on the pruso too. So Rashi says when he makes a motzi lechem in the oritz, he uses the shlemos, and that's all we can say from the Rashi. So far, that's all we can say from the Rashi. Just a little bit. Afkar hu masik v'ishta opo, k'deishelo tachmitz. Yar also,
he stokes and his wife bakes. But the reason is shelo tachmitz, that the dough shouldn't rise, shouldn't become chometz. Fine. Let us do the Rashbam. Afkan says the Rashbam bipruso levorech al achilas matzo, exactly the same as Rashi, to make the broch of al achilas matzo. Ushtei shleimos, maisinun mishuma motzi, and we bring two whole ones because of the motzi delagora mishorium im tovim, because Pesach isn't worse than any other yontev, shetzorech libtzeu al shtei kikoros, where it is necessary to make the motzi on two loaves, uvotzeya me'achas me'ashleimos, and he breaks one of the whole ones.
This is the same
thing
Rashi. He says he's breaking one of the whole ones.
Yes, he breaks one of the whole ones. Rashi also says that.
Exactly the same thing.
And he breaks one of the whole ones. You see, Rashi says he makes a motzi lechem in oretz on the two whole ones. Then he makes a shekel shumetz for alachilas matzo on the pruso. And then he breaks the whole one, but he must break the pruso also, because he made the broch on that. Rashi and the Rashbam don't find it necessary to tell us that. But he's got to eat, he's got to eat from the pruso also. But they don't tell us that. So don't forget, this is an exposition and a commentary on what we have learned. Now let us, Darkushir Oni, just finish the Rashbam. Davku shel oni hu masik v'ishta ofo. The way of the poor man is he stokes and his wife bakes. The nos no miyad l'sanu, and she puts it immediately into the oven kishenik bareseiko, when it's already finished. The stoking is finished. It doesn't mean when there's no more stoking to do, but when it's reached the stage where she can put it in, she puts it in. She yore shemu yitztanen, he's afraid that it'll become cool. She's done in a tanur, that the tanur will lose its heat, will become cool. Kodim sheni yitztamen, before he has a chance. Oskin shnehem, zebe hezekatana vezube iso. So both of them occupy themselves with it. He with the heating, with the stoking, and she and this one with the dough. Afkan, who masik the ishta ofo, in Pesach also, he stokes and his wife bakes, kadeshil of tachmitz, in order that it should not sour, in order that it shouldn't become chometz. Robert, are you with me?
Yeah.
And now let us go to the Tosfos and see what Tosfos says. Tosfos starts, ma darko shel oni bifrus. Says Tosfos, nireh. The gam hamotzi tzorich laborech al haprus. He differs from the Rashi and Rashbam. Hmm. Rashi and Rashbam say that he makes a motzi on the two shlemos, and he makes al achilas matzo on the pruso. Says Tosfos, nire de gam hamotzi tzorich laborech al pruso. It is necessary to make the motzi also on the pruso. Please pay very special attention to the Tosfos, because this is the basis of the Halacha. We want to find out the Halacha. So Tosfos's pshat is different from Rashi and the Rashbam. Tosfos, when he says ma oni shedarka bipruso, afkan bipruso, yar it is also bipruso, that means he makes the motzi and achilas matzo on the pruso too. On the shleimos, but on the pruso too. Got it? Have you got the place, Robert? Tosfos v'chein mashma b'perek keitzad mevorechim. And so is the mashmoos, so it is, appears, from keitzad, from the perek, excuse me, keitzad mevorechim in brochas. Dika Omar, where it says, Hakol modim le'inyan Pesach, Shemeiniach pruso besocha shleimos uvotzeya. I just want to explain to you what the Gemara is discussing there.
Well, you see, I haven't got the time to go. I would have liked to have gone through the Gemara Brachos with you, but I've got to get through the Tosfos. So let us leave the Gemara Brachos. I'll just explain it to you. In the Gemara Brachos, this is the question that is posed. On the table, there is a whole loaf and there is a slice. On what do I make the brocha? Do I make the brocha on the whole loaf, kikor sholem, or do I make the brocha on a sliced piece of bread?
Whole loaf.
I mean, pardon?
Whole loaf.
Do I make it on the whole one, or do I make it on the slice? Now, there is an advantage and a disadvantage in each one. The advantage in the whole one is that it is whole. The disadvantage is it's not ready to put straight into my mouth. The advantage of the sliced one is that I put it straight, I make the broth and I put it straight into my mouth. The disadvantage is that it's not whole. So that is what the Gemara discusses there. Right? And the Gemara comes to the conclusion that he can make if he makes the brocha on the whole, it putters the petitim, it putters the slices also. That is the conclusion that the Gemara comes to. And I don't want to go any further into that, only as much as we have to have for this Tosfos. So that's what the Tosfos says. Dika Omar, it says there, Hakol Modim, all agree, says the Gemara there, the Inyan Pesach, in the matter of Pesach, Shemeniach pruso besucha shleimos, that he puts the pruso in between the shleimos, uvotzeya, perish, what does botzeya mean? Afilu lemando omer mevorech ala shleima ufoter es apetitin, even according to the one who says you make the brocha on the whole loaf, and you don't have to make any brochas on the slices, Mode, he agrees the Inyan Pesach, the Einu Mevorech ala Shleimo, that he doesn't make the brocha on the Shleimo, Elo ala Pruso, but only on the Pruso, Mishum Ma Darko Shel Oni, because of Ma Darko Shel Oni. Now, here, you've got to listen very carefully. Umei Nicho Besoch Shleimo, and why does he put it into the whole one? So that it would appear that he's making the motzi on the shleimo. So you can see from here that Tosfos' shito is that although he puts the big matzah on top, the whole matzah on top, and he's got the pruso underneath, the motzi and the achilas matzah he makes only on the pruso. Rashi and the Rashbam learns that he makes the motzi on the whole, two whole matzahs, and he makes the achilas matzah on the pruso. Tosfos doesn't want to learn like that. Tosfos' shita is no. He makes the motzi and the achilas matzah on the pruso, and that he keeps the whole one there. That is just so that it should appear that there is a whole one there and that is all blend.
Where did Tosfos, what Tosfos source for this? That they don't bring a
bride,
that they don't bring
just let us get the Tosfos first. Just let us get the Tosfos. The Shitas we will discuss afterwards, yes. Just let us get the pshat in the Tosfos. Now, Uwe, if you just look, I'm going to do the second line of the Tosfos again. V'chein mashma v'perek tzari ketzad mevorechin, and so is the mashmor, so it would appear is the meaning. In ketzad mevorechin, dika omar, where it says, hakol modim le'inyan Pesach, everybody agrees that with regard to Pesach, shemeniach pruso v'soch hashleimus, he puts the pruso in between the two whole ones, uvotzeya, and he makes the motzi pirush afidu lemande ome mevorech ala shleimu ufoter es aptitin, even according to the one who says that if there's a whole one in slices, you make the brocha over the whole one, and you can eat of the petitim, it covers everything. Modi, he, that very same man, the Omer, agrees, le'inyan Pesach, with regard to Pesach, the ene mevorech al hashleimo. He doesn't make the brocha over the whole one. Elo al ha-pruso, only on the pruso. And he's speaking about the brocha of Amotzi, he makes on the pruso. Mishum madarku shel oni. Now, just umeinicho besuch hashleimo, and he puts it into the whole one, he doesn't say hashleimos. He says the whole one. And he puts it into the whole one, kedei shiyehei nireh shebotza ala shleimo, in so that it should look as if he made the brocha on the whole one. Umashma, and the mashmos is, dileinyan amotziko mairi. All this is speaking about the motzi, it's not speaking about the brocha of alachilas matzo. That the motzi is also made on the pruso, which is a different pshat from Rashi and the Rashbam. Are you still with me?
Yes.
As soon as you can say yes without the R, tell me. It'll give me a lot of comfort. Uke omar bosa rochi. Uke omar bosa rochi. And in the Gemara, it says afterwards in the Gemara in Brochas, omar Rabbi Chiya bar Abo, said Rabbi Chiya bar Abo, b'shabos chayiv litzewa al shtei kikores. On Shabbos, he must bake the motzi on two loaves, sheneemar, loktu lechem mishna. They gathered a double portion of bread, of mon. On Shabbos, they gathered a double portion of bread. You follow? Now, says Tosfos, that is what it says in the Gemara there. The ikur milsa de Rabbi Chiya bar Abba bepere kol kisvei. And where Rabbi Chiya bar Abba says what he's got to say is in Masichta Shabbos. And it is not in Masichta, that's not the place Masichta Brochas. So why does it bring in the Masichta Brochas? Elo lehochi maisi hochom achad Pesach. Why does it mention the achar after the subject of Pesach in Brochas? Loma to tell us, she tzorich shom matzo shlishish mishum lechem mishnah, that we need a third matzo to make two whole ones for lechem mishnah. So we need the top, we need two whole matzos for lechem mishnah, and he puts the pruso in between. V'chayiv livtzoa al shteiti kikoros bein b'shabbos bein b'yom tov. And on Shabbos and Yom Tov, he must make a motzi on two whole ones. The ilav ochi lo ma'evi shom milse de Rabbi Chiya. If it's not so, then why does he bring the matter of Rabbi Chiya? V'chein posuk Rav Alfis de tzorich livtzoa al shtei kikores b'yom tov. The Rif paskens that on Yom Tov he must make the brocha on shtei kikores. The hatam, and the reason is lefi shehoyo lechem mishno yored ba'arve yomin tovim, because on erev Yom Tov it also came down. The mon also came down on erev Yom Tov. That because I might say that. Only on Erev Shabbos the morn came, because you couldn't collect it on Shabbos, but on Yom Tov you are allowed to collect food, therefore on Yom Tov it came down on Shabbos. Tosfos says no, but we know that there's a view that on Yom Tov it was also on Erev Yom Tov that they fell a double portion. So if they fell a double portion, so on Erev Yom Tov you also have to have Lechem Mishnah. So what is the position on Pesach? He's quoting the Rif. Fortunately, you and I, or I and some of you, have got the Rif. So let us look at the Rif at this stage and see exactly what it is that the Rif says.
Now the rib you will find probably be 50, page 50. Go on. Page 50. Oh yes. Oh yes, he's before Rashi, he's before Rashi. He is the first, really the first Risho, and very much of a Gaon in him, very much of a Gaon.
900.
It goes into the thousands. Rashi was born in 1040 and died in 1104. He was older than Rashi. Now, Tanyo Nami Hochi, if you just look, Omar Shmuel, it is in the Rif 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. The end of the 10th line in the Rif. Omar Shmuel. Omar Shmuel. You've got, there you've got it. Daniel, you share with Milton. Maurice, you've got. Shmuel. Lechem Oni. Exactly the same as the Gemara. Lechem She'oni Nolob Devorim Harbe. What is it? Tanya Nami Ochi Lechem Oni, Lechem She'oni Nolob Devorim Harbe. So, Dober Acher, there's only a very slight difference from the Gemara in that he says Shmuel also used the word Harbe. We've got it only the Brisa uses the word Harbe. Dober Acher, Lechem Oni, Mat, it should be Oni. Ma darko shall only be pruso, af kan be pruso. That's what we've got. Dober ache lechem oni, ma darko shall only hu masik the ishta ofo, af kan hu masik the ishta ofo. Still then, now the Rif paskens. There he quotes the Gemara. Now he paskens. You know what paskens mean? Hilkoch therefore, says the Rif, va pesach on pesach, me vorechin al chado u pruso. One makes hamotzi on one and on the pruso, not on two. On one and the pruso. Avol b'she'or yomim tovim, batzidon artartin rifto shleimoso. But on other yomim tovim, we make hamotzi on two whole loaves. Got it? Yes.
What is the Rif's reasoning? I didn't see a place where one loaf is mentioned.
What is the reasoning?
Yeah,
the
Rif, it seems like you've got either.
Yes, the Rif says, because I didn't want you to go into this tonight, but you forced me, very clever of you. the Rif paskens that you need, in this case, there are two things. First of all, you've got to have two colors. And second,